CBSI and the world. I'm John Batchelor from the surface of the planet Earth. We're staying on the surface of the planet Earth to wish Bob Zimmerman happy birthday. This is happy birthday month for Bob Zimmerman, and at the same time, it is an opportunity for you with subscriptions or donations to support Bob's reporting, especially because we're going to explore a mystery that Bob is very carefully analyzing about the International Space Station and Roscosmos. So this is the final day of the fundraiser, and we turn immediately to the mystery. Bob, what I understand is there is an anomaly on a Soyuz spacecraft right now that resembles a hole in the side of the craft. There was an anomaly on a previous Soyuz that was understood to have been drilled or man-made. Do these events connect with each other? Good evening to you.
Well, even more significant, there was a third hole that developed in the coolant system of a Progress freighter on ISS this past weekend. So let's review. Back in December of, of 2018, a Soyuz capsule suddenly had an air pressure leak, and they discovered that a hole had been drilled in the side of the Soyuz and then patched on the ground. And that patch wasn't really designed to hold very well in space. And so after it was up in space for a period of time, the patch failed. And so suddenly there was decompression in the Soyuz capsule. They fixed the hole, patched it in space, and came home on that Soyuz capsule. The Russians never told anybody what the results of their investigation were of what caused that hole. At one point, they were trying to accuse American astronauts of doing it, but that was absurd. At some point, the former head of Roscosmos, Dmitry Rogozin, said, "We know what caused it, but we're not going to tell anyone." So we never knew what the result of that investigation was. Well, in December of just 2 months ago, the coolant system in the exterior of the service part of a Soyuz capsule suddenly developed a leak and drained all the coolant fluid out of the coolant system. This is to maintain the temperature of the Soyuz capsule during most of its flights. That capsule, therefore, is not considered entirely safe to come back to Earth on. They claim that that hole was created by a micrometeorite or maybe a piece of space junk, and people are willing to accept that. The solution to give people a lifeboat is there were three people that had gone up to ISS on that Soyuz. One was an American. That American is at least temporarily going to come back on the Dragon endurance capsule that is on ISS right now, joining the other four people that came up on that if there's a problem, they have to evacuate. And the two Russians that came up on that Soyuz will go back on that Soyuz. And the thinking is that with only two people on board, when the thermal system is no longer functioning, the heat won't get as high. They won't get as uncomfortable in there because they can't cool the system. There's only two people on board, and they'll get home safely. That's the hope. All right, so that's the Soyuz. This is in December. We got a micrometeorite supposedly hits the coolant system and drains it. Well, this past weekend, a Progress freighter that has been up on ISS for several months and is about to be deorbited and burn up in the atmosphere. Well, it was prepped for deorbit, so its hatch was closed, and I think it was depressurized already so that no one could go in it. Well, it suddenly developed a leak in its coolant system on the exterior of the spacecraft, and that completely drained its coolant systems out. Now, this thing is about ready to be deorbited, so it's not a significant threat to the station. It's not used by people to get back home. But do we notice a pattern going on here? In less than 2 months, two different separate vehicles in their coolant systems develop a leak. They are now investigating this. Now, the picture you mentioned at the start here is the first time that the Russians have released an image of the leak on the December Soyuz coolant system. And I posted that on Behind the Black. I look at that, and there's a red stain around the hole. Is that stain from the coolant escaping? Maybe. Is it a stain developed when the impact occurred? Maybe. We don't know. We don't have pictures yet of the leak on the Progress freighter this past weekend, But there's serious things going on right now among NASA and Russian officials, because one, they have now switched all communications on IS to private channels, and they say this is to reduce speculation. In other words, they want to be able to speak freely about this, and they don't want the public to listen. Then Russians have also now postponed the next Soyuz capsule. This capsule was going to launch unmanned to replace the damaged one from December. And it was going to go up on February 19th. And once it arrived, it would provide ISS once again with sufficient lifeboat capability to get people back home. They wouldn't have to improvise or use the damaged capsule. Well, because of this, they've now delayed that launch for at least 2 to 3 weeks so they can reinspect the capsule, quote, to rule out similar issues in upcoming mission. In other words, they think, oh, maybe there is something going on here that has nothing to do with me and micrometeorites. All in all, the situation is, I'd say, really serious here, and it does raise questions about the Russians and on the ground. Micrometeorites are possible, but the odds of two different coolant systems in less than 2 months getting hit in the exact same way is, I think, almost infinitesimal. And considering that they never told us what happened with that drilled hole, it suggests that they never were able to find out who did it. And that person might still be in their construction facilities on the ground periodically, drilling holes, patching them so that they will fail later in orbit at another time.
Bob, what is Intuitive Machines?
Intuitive Machines is one of a bunch of companies that the United States has that are trying to build lunar landers for making money. And they have got contracts with NASA and others to put payloads on those lunar landers. Intuitive Machines' first mission is supposed to launch in June. They recently changed its landing site to the Ocean of Storms on the moon. Well, they also went public recently with a SPAC, a special purpose acquisition company. And when they announced they were going to do this, when was this? Back in September. They said they were going to, the deal, the merger was going to produce almost $400 million investment capital for Intuitive Machines. Well, now they've completed that merger. They're now a publicly traded company. But in doing so, they only raised, it appears, $50 million from this trade, this merger. And it appears that the SPAC itself was going to bring $300 million to the deal. It appears it didn't bring anything to the deal, which suggests 30% of its membership in the SPAC had voted against this merger. And they have the right to pull their investment capital out of the SPAC if they're not happy with where it's going. And it appears they did, because the SPAC itself had no money to contribute. The merger, though, brought $50 million from another investment company, and that money is still there. But this basically illustrates the cool down in investment interest in these companies. Intuitive Machines is now in a life or death situation. That launch in June is going to determine whether the company survives or not. If it's, the way I think it, if it succeeds, then they're going to be able to get investment capital. If it fails, though, this loss of capital now is probably going to do great harm, and it might prevent the company from
that,
survival.
That's commercial space, Bob. That's the marketplace,
right.
And we'll get used to it. We go to Saudi Arabia, and we have two passengers for later this year. What is the launch, and what is the mission?
This is commercial space. Axiom is a commercial company that's building its own space station, which initially going to be modules on ISS and then break off to become its own space station. They've already flown the one commercial tourist flight to ISS back in last year in February, and they now are going to fly their second tourist flight to ISS. And it's going to carry three passengers, is my understanding. And two of those passengers were paid for by Saudi Arabia. And so the Saudi Arabia, they announced who those passengers will be this week. And one of them is going to be a woman. Saudis are going to fly two different astronauts to ISS later this year. And one of them will be a woman. That's the interesting thing, John. But it is private space, even though it's flying on ISS. And they have to pay, of course, NASA and ISS money to be there. But the flight itself is a commercial private flight, John.
And China. China is boasting 80 launches 2023. How does that stack up to the U.S. and SpaceX, Bob?
The Chinese government says it's going to launch 60 times in 23, 60 plus times. But there was an article on space.com that that added up the number of launches from the half a dozen or so pseudo companies that exist in China. They call them private companies. They are independently created by individuals or companies, and they get investment capital. So it sounds like they're a private company, but they don't own their rockets, and everything they do is entirely supervised by the government. And so I call them pseudo companies. They're really working for the Chinese government, but the Chinese government is trying to create competition and innovation. And this is not an unsmart, this is a smart thing they're doing. So anyway, this article added up the various launches these pseudo companies are going to do and added 20 to the 60 the government is going to do. So it looks like China is aiming to do 80 launches in 23, about 80 launches. SpaceX alone wants to do 100. With other American companies added in their number of launches, the U.S. could actually launch somewhere between 130 and 150 launches in 2023. So we have the opportunity to maybe double what China's doing. In fact, SpaceX will probably top China all by itself, John.
Virgin Orbit did not succeed so far because of regulations to do with its Cornwall base, as I recall, and we never got the details. And now we have a new story, what appears to be either regulatory or public pressure on a Canadian rocket startup. Where is it, Bob?
Yeah, this was in Ontario. This is a rocket startup called Space Ride, and it's a startup. So there are probably other factors involved here than just the opposition. But they had purchased a piece of land in a rural area to do engine tests. And they did some engine tests, and lo and behold, the local community started a petition with more than 800 signatures asking the local municipality to stop the tests because the tests were noisy. Could be heard for many miles. Oh, my heart be still. And so because of that, the local municipality asked them to stop engine tests unless they applied for a new zoning regulation. And the company stopped testing, and it's now gone bankrupt. And it says it was this action by the municipality and the opposition of local people that caused it to fail. That could be a bit of a factor. It might not have been the only factor. You know, this is rocket science, and so things don't always work.
My memory is when SpaceX was looking to test its engines that became the engines of Falcon 9, they went to Texas. There are two sites or three sites in Texas for testing, and they are considerably far away from populations, but at the same time, the populations welcomed them because it meant jobs. Didn't this mean jobs for the region?
It probably did. In the case of the site in Texas, the SpaceX launches, they do have to limit their testing to certain hours so as not to disturb people at night, for example. But they didn't try to ban it. The local community worked with SpaceX to try to, you know, find a happy medium, a compromise, because they recognized, as you said, John, it brings jobs. And so, no, we're in the dark ages here. We will not have noise, so we will instead be unemployed.
Bob Zimmerman, it is happy birthday, Bob Zimmerman, your last opportunity to subscribe or donate to Bob's analysis of the unsolved mystery of the Roscosmos spacecraft and what appears to be coincidence. No reason to call it conspiracy when coincidence will do. We're going to turn to Mars and exploration, especially that of the brave little toaster Ingenuity. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Baxter.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Baxter.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section, when Dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful, pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets. Anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, Visit www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.